Hi, my name is Perry Cohen. I'm CEO of the Pharmacy Group, and I'm welcoming you to my next version of Conversations with Perry and Friends. And this month's podcast is on the changing role of the patient in healthcare. And it's a real treat to have someone that's an expert on this area, Daniel Mullins, who's currently a professor and executive director of the Patients Program with the University of Maryland School of Pharmacy. So let's get right to it. Daniel, can you please share a bit about your educational background, your training, and the patient's program?
When I was an assistant professor, I was what we used to call a pharmacoeconomist, right? Those people who look at the cost effectiveness of a new drug as it comes on the market. And one of the things that I was realizing is that we were trying to assess either the value of a drug or some other health technology. But oftentimes, although we said it was from the perspective of the insurer or the payer, my sense was that a lot of those to me look like marketing messages. And so I started working with insurance companies to redesign how we did cost effectiveness to really have it be from the lens of a payer. So that's the part that my background being in the insurance industry, wanting insurers to have what they needed to make decisions. And then fast forward about 10 years, so no longer an assistant professor, was promoted to associate professor. A lot of my clinician colleagues were now doing community-based interventions. And so instead of looking at the value of, say, a new antihypertensive drug, we now would look at the value of a program that would get people screened for hypertension and into appropriate treatment if they were there. And what was kind of cool about these researchers is because we had done these studies out in community clinics, not just at University of Maryland, Baltimore, we felt that we should bring the results back and present what we learned. And I started thinking, this is really good that we're following through on a commitment to sharing what we've learned, but why are we only talking with patients and community-based providers when we're finished with the study? Maybe if we talked to them when we were starting our study, we could do a better job where research would really answer their questions the way when I was doing pharmacoeconomics, I wanted to answer the true questions of the insurer. So from assistant professor trying to redesign research to answer questions for insurers, I then started redesigning clinical trials to answer questions that patients and their community providers actually have about their treatment options.
Okay. And tell me about the patient's program. What is that?
Yes. The patient's program is what we call a community academic partnership. So in the same way that you'd have a public-private partnership, here we have community members and community leaders who work with an academic institution as a research team. Our mission is that the patients program collaborates with patients, care partners, and communities across the nation to guide research that improves lives and delivers positive health solutions for all, right? So it's a research infrastructure in where we bring people who are affected by disease in as research partners so that research answers their questions and they can understand what research is all about.
Okay. Are patients reluctant to participate in this research in 2025?
Now, you remember I'm an economist, right, Perry? And so
yeah.
Economists are famous for saying, on the one hand, and on the other hand, so you ask me, are they still reluctant? My answer is yes and no.
Good.
So yes, they're reluctant to participate because many patients still don't trust researchers and research institutions because they've heard the bad things that we've done over the years. So that's the yes. But no, because increasingly, more people are having conversations about research. More researchers are talking with patients and the public about research. And so the mystery behind research, I think, is going away, and research is more meaningful. So that's helping us that people aren't as reluctant. Now, I think there still are some misperceptions that we need to talk about. And one is that there are certain subgroups that just don't ever want to participate in research. And you sometimes hear this in research circles that minorities just don't want to participate in research. And what we have found is that that's not true, that minorities are just as likely to participate in research as anybody else, but because they oftentimes don't seek care in research-intensive institutions, they're never asked to participate. And so I think people are willing to participate, but still some problems because they either are afraid of research or they're not asked to participate.
All right. Well, let's switch from research and let's talk about healthcare. Is it true that patients don't have trust in the healthcare system and healthcare professionals?
So that one is another yes and no. Yes, there's a lot of patients who don't trust healthcare providers. Hard stop. I would say there's a lot of hospitals that people don't trust. And I think some of this is that, unfortunately, if you go into a hospital and you have a positive experience, you kind of leave and you don't talk about it. You go into a hospital and you have a bad experience, you talk about it. And so I think people hear a lot of bad stories about things that have gone wrong. So I think that is part of the reason that people don't trust. There's also this issue of financial that I hear a lot, especially in poorer communities, that I don't think, you know, this is what I hear. I don't think that I'm getting the same quality of care that people get across town.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's fair. So what strategies do you use in the patient's program to increase trust?
Well, the first is listening, right? Most of the patients who connect with us say that they feel that we're the first group that's ever really listened to them. And that's kind of sad because we're researchers, right? And so they're not just saying other researchers don't listen to them. They actually think that the healthcare system and sometimes even healthcare providers aren't listening. And so I think one way that we try to increase trust is that we can have a conversation that I'm genuinely interested in you as a human being. And I think every pharmacist, every physician, every nurse, every social, every healthcare professional starts out with that goal. But because of the time constraints, sometimes our healthcare providers don't help to make patients feel that they're heard, right? And so number one, allow people to feel heard, listen to what they have to say. And then if we then have a conversation, we can introduce some treatment options and we can educate people. And when you educate people, but you don't force them to do something, they start trusting you because you give them some options, but you don't say, you know, I'm the doctor, so this is what you have to do. It's I'm the doctor and I can give you some knowledge that will help us come up with a good plan for you. And here's where I think pharmacy can really step in, because sometimes pharmacists have an opportunity to really educate patients. And I think there's room for improvement in that area. And if that were to happen, then we'd increase trust.
Okay, that's great. So now I got a simple one for you. It's a true or false question. For a lot of patients, it isn't about trust. It's about the cost of healthcare. True or false?
How was it true? You said for a lot of patients, you didn't say all patients. It is true about costs. But I would say that a lot of times when it's about costs, there's still some worry about trust as well there. People are concerned that healthcare has just gotten too expensive. And I'm even seeing that we're 15 or 20 years ago, they meant by that their out-of-pocket was too much. Now I think because of things like price transparency laws and just policies, people are much more aware of how much money is being spent on them, even if it's not out-of-pocket. And so I do think that a lot of patients now are saying, my goodness, healthcare has just gotten too expensive, not just for me, but for our country. And we need to do something about that. And I think right now that's almost bubbling up ahead of trust. So I would be true.
All right. So there are about 330 million people in the United States. Okay. 216 million of them have private health insurance. They're covered. And the rest are covered by government health plans. But even with that, we have about 26 million uninsured. What does this mean to the patient?
It means that you should be embarrassed that America hasn't figured this one out. And we've been talking about this for decades, right? This is something that has been for decades. The embarrassing truth is that there are more uninsured in our country than in many other countries that are much less wealthy than the United States. And so it does seem to me that we could find a way so that everybody could have insurance coverage. And when that doesn't happen, then we know this is evidence-based, that patients without insurance will wait a little bit longer and sometimes a lot longer before they seek care. And oftentimes they then end up in the emergency department, right? And so for the people who don't have insurance, this is a big problem because suddenly you find yourself in the insurance field of not being able to afford your health care because you're your own insurer, so to speak.
Right.
For the rest of the country, I think they feel, well, wait a minute, somehow that must be taxpayer dollars that are then footing the bill. And so this is a problem. And yet we've been talking about this for a very long time and we haven't solved it. So I think what it means for patients is that if you're one of the unlucky ones that doesn't have health insurance, if you get sick, you know, it could literally bankrupt you. And if you're one of the ones who has insurance, you should want the other people to have insurance too, because otherwise when they get sick and they can't afford it, you're going to end up paying.
Yeah. All right. Makes sense. Okay. Let's shift gears now. The title of our program is The Changing Role of the Patient Healthcare. So now we're going to talk about change for the next few minutes. Okay.
Sounds good.
The role of the patient is changing. We agree with that. Yep. Can you help me define certain terms, though, that get used out there in the lay public as well as in the healthcare world? The term patient or member or consumer. Walk me through each of those.
All right. So first, I'm sure somebody listening is going to disagree because you can write papers and papers and papers with, you know, 5,000 words on each. But my simple definitions for patient. For a patient, it's someone who has an illness or a medical condition that requires care and or treatment, right?
Okay.
For a member, that means that you're part of an insurance group and you're a member in that group and you're eligible for insurance payments when you need care or treatment.
Okay.
And then a consumer is someone who purchases care or treatment, but typically those consumers explore their options, right? So a consumer is a patient who doesn't simply take whatever their doctor tells them to do, what their pharmacist tells them to do. A consumer is one who goes out there and finds out what are my options, compares prices and things like that.
Okay. I think I get it. So how do we make the consumer a more informed purchaser of healthcare?
Well, I think if you're educated, you're a better consumer. There used to be a commercial about that, right? If you grew up in the New York area, there was a company that said an educated consumer is our best customer. And so I do think the first thing is that we want people to be educated. And yet some people's way of getting educated doesn't necessarily provide them with reliable information, right? And so the new thing today is, yes, you need to be educated, but you can't just open up your computer and look on the internet because not every site on the internet has credible and reliable information.
Yes. No.
You heard it here first, Perry.
Okay.
Yes. So, although I think we also need to teach people, like, where can you go for reliable information?
Okay.
I'm the first one to say we could go back to healthcare providers, but then patients say, well, I try to go to my healthcare providers and they don't have enough time for me, right? And so then I think we need to find out, are there some provider extenders, right? So there's some evidence that individuals like community health workers in some disease states actually can provide credible information and that saves some time. Certainly patient advocates can provide credible information and that can save some time. And certainly if people are going on the internet to credible sources, that can provide some really good education. I just want to make sure that it's not a random site, that it's a credible site. So they're educated on credible information, not educated on things that, you know, may not be the truth, or on the internet these days, that's deliberately not the truth to confuse people. And that's a big problem these days.
So I'm just going to ask you a sidebar. What about government websites? State, federal?
I think government websites should be the number one go-to. But I think that government websites often still don't have things that are in lay language and are easy to find what you're looking for. And I think it's because historically they've set it up for more educated healthcare providers who know how to find on a government website information. I do think several federal agencies are now recognizing that if patients and consumers are going to go there, that like other websites, they need to format their websites to make them more consumer friendly. Once that happens, I think that will be a great source. It's still a great source, but you have to know how to find what you're looking for on a government website.
Yeah, what I've heard is the physician surrogate these days is somebody called Dr. Google.
Yes. Yes. He's very popular these days.
You type in anything, he'll answer anything.
But I'll tell you one thing about Dr. Google, whoever he or she is. He or she is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Right.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hey. I don't know too many other healthcare providers who are, right? And so I don't blame patients that they're turning to a doctor who's available when they need to talk to, you know.
All right.
Yeah.
So I get that part of the equation. Here's the other thing. How do we get consumers to take responsibility for their health? And what I'm talking about is the trifold of prevention, early detection, and treatment.
Okay. I do know something about this.
Okay.
Many, many, many patients think back on what happened with their grandparents when they were young, and they still believe that that's going to happen to them. And so the first thing is that if you get the same diagnosis that your grandmother or grandfather got, you know, 60 years ago, well, that's not necessarily going to have the same outcome today. And so I think the first thing we can get them to do is take responsibility that you do not have to have the same prognosis that your grandparents had, right? And so back then, maybe cancer was a terminal diagnosis. It's not today. Maybe back then, people who went on dialysis were eventually going to lose a limb. That's not true today, right? And so all these things that a lot of people saw happen, the first thing is realizing that you could have a much healthier life than you think you can have. Okay, now that we've got you on board with this, now how do you do that, right? And so I think first it's accepting that I can be healthier than I realized I could be. But then it does mean that you really do need to change some of your behaviors. And some of those are the behaviors that are just, you know, like how you socialize that could get you into trouble, so to speak. But then some of it is that, you know, prevention is a good thing. And you shouldn't wait until you get sick to start thinking about your health. You should start thinking about your health while you're healthy so you can stay healthy a little bit longer. The second way we can get consumers to take responsibility is provide incentives, right? So first is, you know, like you're an important person, you can be healthy, figure out how to do that and talk to your healthcare providers. The second is we can give them incentives. So, you know, we can eliminate your copayment as an incentive to get you to come into a well visit. We can decrease your out-of-pocket expense to get you to stay adherent to your medicines. In some cases, we could even pay you to do something that's healthy, right? And that could be either literally a payment or, as you know, some companies are now giving you a free membership to a health club. And that's kind of like a payment to you, right, to be healthy.
Yeah. Right? Okay. All right. Well, you know, this podcast is for managed healthcare executives, so I want to talk about health plans for a second. What should health plans do to stay relevant to consumers when providing health insurance in today's changing world?
Right. Now, the consumers are the ones that are out there looking for information, I said, right? Okay. Health insurers, I think, are expecting healthcare providers in general to provide the information. But what they could do is they could fill in those gaps about information and education that patients say, I feel like my healthcare providers don't have time. What if the health insurers, those plans, actually provided information that would help patients to be healthier, right? Now, not only are you helping your insured to be healthier, but you're probably also going to have more loyal members, the people who belong to your plan. So I think that they should fill that information gap that we've been talking about. And that would be a great way to help their members be healthy and even to have their members stay with them.
All right. With increasing drug costs, we need new models to better manage these costs, all these cell and gene therapies. What do consumers want from their pharmacy benefit?
I think they want from their pharmacy benefit the same that they want from the human beings that they call, you know, their pharmacist and their physician. They want a decision made that would be the same that would be made for the pharmacy benefit or the physician or the pharmacist family member, right? When I talk to patients, they say that when I go into a doctor's office or when I'm about to receive care somehow, I want that person to do for me what they would do for a member of their family. Right.
Okay.
And I think that because patients are now more sensitized to how expensive healthcare is, they no longer want everybody to just spend as much money as possible all the time. Right. Like, I think those days are over. And so I'm not saying that they want always the absolute best and most expensive, but they want what you would do for your family. Right. And I think if that litmus test were in place, people would have a really good feeling about pharmacy benefit, about providers, about the healthcare system, you know, the government, everybody else.
Okay. Will consumers trust health plans?
Let's give it a try, right? Some will, some won't, but some will. And so, you know, I would say that health plans should do it because it's the right thing to do. And over time, the more conversations you have, as I said, the more people begin to trust you. So will they trust them on day one? Probably not, in the same way that when I walk into a new institution and I say, I'm a researcher from University of Maryland, Baltimore, they don't say, oh, we'll come right this way. We have to have a couple conversations, but then eventually they trust me. And so let's start, and trust will build over time.
Oh, I trust you. We're coming up on the hour now, so I'll go with a final question.
Okay.
Get out your crystal ball. What changes do you predict for patients in healthcare in 2026?
Well, definitely increased consumerism.
Right? Okay.
As healthcare and treatment options become more expensive, but also more plentiful, right? People focus on the expensive side, but also you have a lot more treatment options now, right? If you only have one option, you have to buy it. But when you have a couple options, now consumerism is going to be on the rise. And I keep hearing from the pharmacists who graduated from University of Maryland School of Pharmacy that more patients are coming into their pharmacy now and saying, is there another alternative? They're asking the pharmacist that. And then the pharmacist saying, I explained that there are, but then you need to reconnect with your physician. And what's kind of cool now is sometimes the pharmacist and the physician can connect on behalf of the patient for that patient and switch something over. But I'm starting to hear a lot about this consumerism. My second is, I also predict that patients will start having more conversations about what they want when they're closer to the end of their life. You know, I think more and more people have seen someone extend their life by a few weeks and question whether in hindsight the patient really would have chosen that if they understood what was about to happen. And so I think that this whole idea is becoming a bigger issue. I know for myself, my mom died like literally almost 30 years ago. But I still remember that it was so important to her not to go back to a hospital. And I know that if she'd gone back to a hospital, she might have actually even gotten better care. Like, we understood that. She understood that. But she wanted to stay at home in her bed. Now, some other people, that wouldn't be the right answer for them. But that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that we're going to do one thing or another, but I think we're going to have more conversations so that families know what someone wants if you end up in that situation like we were in with my mom, when we knew they couldn't cure her cancer. And so we wanted to know, like, how do you want to spend your remaining weeks or months?
All right. Well, this has been very enjoyable. I've learned a lot once again from you, Daniel. And I want to thank everybody for joining Conversations with Perry and Friends. And we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you, Perry.